It is Monday, April the 2nd, 2012. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of www.gerweckgerwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling and MMA news. And tonight we're going to take a look at last night's WrestleMania 28. And to help me out, I have my former tag team partner, Adam Fairfax. How you doing tonight, Adam?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
We're doing good. And I guess before we kind of dissect the whole show, which we will do, going, you know, match by match, segment by segment, everybody, our thoughts and opinions on the show overall. Before we do that, maybe just a general opinion. WrestleMania is less than 24 hours old as we do this. What's kind of your general overall opinion of last night's show?
Well, you know, first off, I got to say, it's kind of hard to believe that it's been a full year. It seems like we were just critiquing and maybe criticizing a little bit WrestleMania 27 from last year. But I guess fast forward a year later, here we are. It was WrestleMania 28. We pretty much knew since our conversation last year what the main event was going to be. Of course, we saw year-long hype of John Cena and The Rock, which of course was the selling point for the show, but there were a lot of intriguing matches on the undercard. Some, you know, built up bigger than others. Some lived up to that build up. Some, in my opinion, not so much. But overall, I think the show, I give it somewhere a thumbs in the middle, slightly leaning towards a thumbs up, maybe about a 60%. But overall, I have to say I did enjoy the show.
Yeah, I thought the pay-per-view itself started off really slow, and obviously they wanted to put non-big matches, I guess, up front. And then it threw a little bit of a knuckle curveball by putting the World Heavyweight Championship match first. Actually, the first match was a match that aired on the WWE website, which is a little disappointing to me because there's a 30-minute pre-show for the pay-per-view subscribers. Of course, I had it on, and then I had realized that they were only streaming the tag title match to WWE.com or YouTube. So if you weren't checked into the internet, you would have missed this. And honestly, if you missed it, you probably didn't really miss much. It was a tag title match, only 5 minutes, and you think on a 30-minute pre-show they'd give them more than 5 minutes. But Epico and Primo defeated the Usos and Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel to retain the title via the Backstabber. I don't know if you saw this, Adam, but it's just one of those matches they kind of rushed through to open up the crowd for the night.
Yeah, that's how it sounds. I didn't catch the match. I really didn't catch much of the pre-show. I was actually outside mowing my grass, enjoying a little bit of the warm spring weather that we're having. But no, I didn't catch it. To me, this is a match that could have happened on Superstars, another show that I don't catch. And, you know, I'm glad that these guys got a chance to work in front of the WrestleMania crowd. They'll get that WrestleMania payday. But it's just a shame how far the tag team division has fallen. The Usos and Epico and Primo, I think they have shown promise, but without a push or without any substantial push with the tag team division, it just, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if next year it was left not only off the show, but off the pre-show altogether.
You know, sometimes they do like a Divas Battle Royal for the crowd. That'll typically end up on the DVD release as an extra. I guess this will be the case in this one, although this time they allowed, you know, people to see it live, as they've been, obviously they have a relationship with YouTube to provide more video content. They did put the press release, the conference call, I guess the original Miami pre-WrestleMania press conference was streamed through YouTube. You get a chance to see it, and they did the same thing here. Now, the one thing to note here, they also mentioned in the pre-show that the match that would open up the pay-per-view would be the World Heavyweight Championship match, Daniel Bryan defending against Sheamus. And I believe they did this with the Royal Rumble, where the first match was the World Heavyweight Championship. And I'm going to ask you, Adam, before we get into this match, because there's not much to get into with the match itself, how do you feel about them opening up a pay-per-view with a world championship match?
Well, it just goes to show how much, or how little, I should say, the championships, the titles actually mean in WWE, especially the World Heavyweight title. you know, you think back to when they initially split the, I guess, undisputed WWE Championship. You know, Brock Lesnar won the unified title that Chris Jericho had unified at Vengeance in 2002 or 2003, whenever that was. And Triple H had gotten the title and it made the rounds through a couple guys, and then Brock Lesnar had it, and Stephanie McMahon signed him exclusively to SmackDown back when Vince was trying to create his own competition between the shows. And, you know, to be honest with you, they really just brought the World Heavyweight Championship back. It didn't really mean much. Eric Bischoff pulled it out of a suitcase. But, you know, at that time, it was the main focus on the A show on Raw. And since then, we've seen it flip-flop back and forth between SmackDown and Raw. And, you know, on one hand, you can say, well, you know, the WWE is paying the proper respect to Bryan Danielson. It's giving him a push. It's giving him the World Heavyweight title, which is the, you know, basically the secondary world championship in the company. But in my opinion, I think it just goes to show you that the titles don't really mean a whole lot in WWE. When was the last time? You know, well, I guess last year. But you know, the focus of this show wasn't built around a WWE Championship match, so the titles don't really mean much anymore. And you know, I was trying to think as we saw the match, and I know we'll get into it, but I believe that this is Sheamus' second time holding the World Heavyweight title. But then I wasn't sure. It's just It's gone back and forth between guys that they've tried to bring up from the mid card and push as main event stars, and then, you know, it's kind of been a test to see how they'll do on the upside of things. But I think it's a shame. I think it could mean more. I think had this match been given more time, I don't have a problem with it being the opening match if it's a good opening match. Usually you think WrestleMania, you think, let's kick off the show with something hot. Let's kick off the show with something good. Let's get the crowd into it. And maybe their rationalization of having a face come out and beat this guy who's been dodging everybody and who's managed to somehow come out on top and retain the world title, we're going to have him go down in 18 seconds. We're going to try and beat a record, which who knows if, you know, that's legit. But, you know, maybe they thought that would pump the crowd up. But to me, I don't think Sheamus is in a position where he's over enough to do that. And it was just a wasted opportunity to showcase Daniel Bryan, one, on a grand stage, and two, to really kind of reestablish that World Heavyweight Championship as something that is important. That's important to the wrestlers. That's important to the promotion, and that's something that should be important to the fans. But I think they fell short on that.
Yeah, I thought when they announced initially that the World Heavyweight Championship match would open up WrestleMania 28, even though I don't like them opening up a pay-per-view with a World Championship match, I think the championship matches should go on last. I guess I'm old school in thinking whatever the card is, the championship belt should be the main event. You know, that's kind of the way I grew up watching NWA back in the day. But they went ahead and put this on first. So then I thought, okay, that means they want to put on a strong wrestling match and open up the show. Obviously, the pre-match to WrestleMania, the tag match wasn't much to rev up the fans. So you think, okay, they put Sheamus and Daniel Bryan in a match. These guys can actually wrestle. It should be a good match. And then they give him 18 seconds, and I just, I guess, cringed. Go back to the old hotline days, I'd say something make me cringe. And I was really looking forward to this match. It wasn't one of the matches that excited me the most about the show. I think this was a two-match show, and then, as you were saying, the title matches itself didn't really mean much because the Undertaker, Triple H, and the Rock Cena matches were the headline matches on the show, obviously. But at the same time, they booked two pretty good world title matches, in my opinion, at least on paper, and they gave us 18 seconds. And to me, it looked like Daniel Bryan was over. There's a lot of yes signs in the crowd. I think the fans were revved up for it, looking forward to a good match. You know, if Sheamus wins, that's one thing, you know, in a nice long match. But they kind of stole it from us. I mean, this is a match, remember, that the Divas match went longer. We were subjected to the Brodus Clay angle, which went on way too long, in my opinion. We had a couple rap performances that went on way long. And in the end, at WrestleMania, we got 18 seconds for a World Heavyweight Championship match. I was very disappointed in this one. And to me, Adam, this is what kind of started me kind of in a downward spiral with the show, because this was a match I was kind of looking forward to, and then the next two or three matches were not matches I was looking forward to. They kind of threw them up front. I guess you want to get them out of the way. I guess the next two or three matches plus the Team Johnny versus Team Teddy matches were not matches I was particularly looking forward to. And then the second match I came back with was Randy Orton versus Kane. I don't think the fans were really into this match. I don't think these two styles meshed very well. And to me, in watching this match, it was one that I think a lot of people expected Randy Orton to win. So they said, okay, if everybody thinks Randy Orton's going to win, we'll throw you a curveball and we'll let Kane go over.
Well, I tell you, just one more point to hit on with the World Heavyweight Championship match, and that is that the World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE Championship, are supposed to be what this entire, you know, they've coined the phrase WWE Universe, but it's what the whole WWE is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be the reason why we're here, the reason why Raw is on, the reason why the wrestlers show up, the reason why the fans are there. It's supposed to be the pinnacle of this profession, and to treat it that way, again, it's a terrible thing. But the Randy Orton Kane match, you know, what can I say? It sounded like a few times we got a boring chant from the crowd. And, you know, other than Kane's entrance, which I think would have been much more effective after the sun had gone down, the number one thing that this match did for me was expose Randy Orton's weaknesses. I really honestly, you know, I've been saying for a while, I think Randy Orton's a bit overrated, and I think that, you know, not that anyone would have ever imagined that this would be a five-star classic, but if you can't, you know, if you can't come up with a decent match with Kane, and I mean, I think it's hard to place the blame on Kane in this one, because, you know, this guy's worked basically the same style for the last, oh my God, 20 years, however long it's been, and, you know, you're right, the styles didn't mesh. I think it exposed Randy Orton as, you know, an inferior worker, if you will, and it just fell completely flat. And I'm really, really surprised that Kane went over in this one. I think Randy Orton must be in the doghouse for something. I can't imagine why they first of all, this whole angle seemed rushed. I don't watch SmackDown nearly as much as I do Raw, but and I know that that's where the majority of the build-up for this this match came, but it seemed like it was all rushed. I really enjoyed the angle where Kane returned with John Cena. I thought it was very well done, and it really changed John Cena in my eyes a little bit. And for them to just have Kane move on from that to this, I really honestly thought Randy Orton was going to go over in this one, and when he didn't, I just thought, you know, you made somebody mad.
Yeah, I thought the booking was kind of illogical here. I agree with you. I'm not a big Randy Orton fan. I think he is overrated. At the same time, he's the second match at WrestleMania in a program that was very rushed. I believe the original program was going to be Randy Orton versus Alberto Del Rio. Of course, he was not available, so they didn't book him for the WrestleMania show. So they went with Kane. And as I was saying before, I didn't think the styles meshed very well. They really tried to put over in the commentary, you know, that Randy Orton is a 9-time World Heavyweight Champion, and here he is losing to Kane, who they've really, you know, they seldomly use all that much anymore on a regular basis. And so they put Kane over Randy Orton, kind of surprised. Maybe they felt like they needed some surprises on the show. A lot of people had a lot of the matches figured out which way they were going to go. They put a curveball here. Obviously, Orton losing to Kane doesn't really hurt him that much. I think the same thing was thought of when we get to the main event, that, you know, Cena losing doesn't really necessarily hurt him. Obviously, losing to The Rock, a future Hall of Famer, doesn't really hurt his status. I guess they figured here, Orton losing to Kane doesn't really hurt his status. Kane, of course, is a former World Heavyweight Champion. And then again, I think everybody's a former World Heavyweight Champion in this company. You know, at this time in Randy Orton's career, he's a 9-time World Champion. I mean, that's just kind of where we are in 2012. We had this really cheesy backstage skit with Santino, Captain from the Deadliest Catch, and Mick Foley. They were eating crab legs. It was just a spot where they were pigging out. And then Ron Simmons, who of course was in for the Hall of Fame, congratulations to Simmons, definitely deserved being in the Hall of Fame, comes in and says, damn. And then we go to the next match, which was the IC Championship match. It was Cody Rhodes defending the title against The Big Show. And, of course, they really had played up, Adam, that The Big Show has one of the worst WrestleMania records. I think they said his record was 3-8 at WrestleMania. So, the way they played up the storyline, he really needed to win. Cody Rhodes had the title for 233 days, I believe is what Michael Cole was saying. So, you know, in today's age, if you have the title for 233 days, you're not going to hold the title too much longer. So in this one, Cody did the job clean to the Big Show, and the Big Show is now the Intercontinental Champion.
Well, you know, first off, I've got to say I have no problem with celebrities at WrestleMania and then, you know, using celebrity, to enhance the product or the just the overall star appeal of the show. But when you have Captain Keith from The Deadliest Catch do a skit with Santino Marella and Mick Foley, come on. That to me was something that, if that was on Raw, on free television, I would say get to something better. But to be on WrestleMania, the biggest show of the year, you know, I mean, you charge people an arm and a leg for the show, and you're going to give them stupid skits like that. I understand that they want to get as many people on camera as they can. Why not have Mick Foley participate as the rumors went around as one of the members of Team Teddy against Team Johnny or whatever? Get him involved that way somehow. Get him involved in something other than a skit where he cracks crab legs open with a sock on his hand. And Ron Simmons, of course, definitely 100% deserving of the Hall of Fame. I remember Ron Simmons. I remember watching it the night that he beat Big Van Vader for the WCW World title and being super excited. I was quite a bit younger then, but I remember Ron Simmons for more than damn. And I remember him for more than the APA, and it's a good thing to see Ron Simmons go into the Hall of Fame because he definitely deserves it. But Cody Rhodes and Big Show, I have a hard time believing. I like Cody Rhodes. Don't get me wrong. I like the guy. I think that for Cody Rhodes to be an effective heel with his stature, I think that he really, really, really – and this just goes to show you that, WWE rushes things. Cody Rhodes, in my opinion, is lacking experience. He has no right to be, working as the Intercontinental Champion at a WrestleMania because he's just not there yet. I think Cody Rhodes really needs to work on his technical ability. I think that, if you send him, where can you send him? But go to Japan. I think Cody Rhodes could really, really benefit from a few years in Japan. But I have a hard time believing that even though Cody Rhodes is the future of the WWE, that the Big Show would have a hard time at all defeating him. I mean, I wanted to believe in this match. I wanted to get into this match and believe that I was what to suspend that disbelief, I guess. But to me, there's no possible way that Cody Rhodes could have ever stood a chance. It was too mismatched. It was too lopsided. I have nothing against the Big Show. I like the guy. I think he still has something to offer after all this time. But I would have much rather seen Cody Rhodes versus Booker T, like we got before, or Cody Rhodes against Goldust that had been rumored. I would have much rather seen that angle. I think that's the kind of angle that Cody Rhodes needs to truly get over something that is believable. In that, there's no reason that shouldn't be believable. It hits pretty darn close to home, considering Goldust is his half-brother. But as far as the match goes, I wasn't really surprised that the Big Show went over. It wasn't anything too memorable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And so we ended up with we start off the show with the 18-second title match. We got Kane versus Orton. Then we had the Big Show winning the IC Championship. I don't think that many people in the building cared about it. That was one of the things I wanted to mention about the show itself. There was certainly the fans had come for the two big special matches of the night. They definitely came for Undertaker, Triple H. They definitely came for Cena and The Rock later in the show. But a lot of the show itself, if you go back and listen to the commentary with the fans, there really wasn't a lot of excitement from the fans. And really early on, there really wasn't much to pop for. And then came along the fourth match of the show, which was the Divas match. And we knew Maria from Extra already came into the night where she had these sore ribs, and they were playing up on commentary that she had a sore foot as well. But they put her in a match with Kelly Kelly against the Divas champion, Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres. And I know, Adam, during the night, you actually went on my Facebook page and made note that this was one of the worst matches we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know what the point of the, if the tag team division is as bad as it is, or it gets the push that it gets, which is pretty much none, and the women's division, you turn around and it is the absolute worst it has ever been. I would rather see Medusa, which, you know, that was a hot rumor. Is Medusa going to come to WrestleMania to challenge Beth Phoenix? I'd go back to the days of Alundra Blaze, where she wrestled, you know, any one of the handful of Japanese women wrestlers that were imported that, you know, you really didn't care about, you knew nothing about, and the announcers couldn't pronounce their names. Just a terrible, terrible match. I don't know why they went forward with Maria. There was at one point in time that Beth had a bear hug on, I want to say. It was kind of from the side. I'd never seen something executed that way before. And I just thought, the number one thought that went through my head at that point in time was that I felt very sorry, very much sorry for Beth Phoenix, because I think given the right competition, she could be a great women's wrestler. And rumor has it that she at one point was a great women's wrestler, but we haven't seen any competition that could showcase her skills. I mean, you got Natty Neidhart running around somewhere, but, you know, what happened to her? She kind of fell off. Kelly Kelly is not Trish Stratus. She's never going to be Trish Stratus. Her entrance music kind of gets you because you almost think, oh man, you know, that sounds a little bit like Trish Stratus, but the people don't pop like they did for Trish Stratus. So I don't know. I see the women's division getting, if it's possible, far much more worse than better in the near future. Just a shame, scrap this match, and the fact that they gave it so much time. I closed my eyes, and I had them closed so tight that I had images of Michael Cole versus Jerry Lawler from last year, and I was happy with it. So if that goes to tell you anything about how I felt about this match, I always thought it was funny that there was a category in the Wrestling Observer newsletter for worst worked match of the year, because this is professional wrestling and all the matches are worked. But that was the thought that went through my head, worst worked match of the year, because it was absolutely abysmal.
Yeah, worst worked match, I guess, opposed to a shoot match, which would be an MMA fight. But I definitely agree, man, this was brutal. Not a match you'd want to see at WrestleMania, not a match you'd want to see on Raw, really. I mean, nothing special about it. I think it was obvious that Maria had the injuries, that she really couldn't do a whole lot. Not that you would expect her to do much anyways, being a non-trained wrestler. But again, they've done a good job, I thought, with Beth Phoenix, building her up as this ultimate women's champion, Divas champion, that nobody can beat her. She's going to hold this title forever. And there was certainly enough opponents out there they could have brought in. You mentioned Natalya. I thought that would have made a lot of sense, putting Natalya against Beth Phoenix one-on-one. Certainly they can do that somewhere down the line. Certainly they can do Karma when Karma gets all her issues resolved and she's able to come back. I would have loved to see Medusa, as you were saying. I think that would have been excellent. We talked to Medusa here at Gerwick.net, and it sounded like she needed a little more time to prepare for it. They would have given her a little more notice. She probably would have been more open to do it, but they went this direction. Of course, they have to have their token celebrity appearance. Of course, they were going to do the Shaq O'Neal. They didn't go in that direction. That was supposed to be what Shaq O'Neal against the Big Show. They went in this direction with Maria from Extra. I guess they got whatever pub they wanted from it. I don't know if it aired on Extra tonight. I'm assuming it did. We're taping this probably about the time it's airing. But overall, I agree with Adam. This was not a match that will stick out in your memory, being anything on a positive side. But the good news is that was the first half of the show, or the first four matches. The first four matches were nothing to write home about. I actually was starting to think that this is going to be one of the worst WrestleManias I've ever seen. And then we went to one of the feature matches. Obviously, this is the rematch from last year. Hell in the Cell, Undertaker versus Triple H with Shawn Michaels as a special guest referee. The story here is that Undertaker was being beat down by Triple H. He had the sledgehammer. He had the chairs. He kept doing headshots. I think they finally let them bleed a little bit in this match. Of course, they've been getting away from that with the PG direction they've been going. But the storyline here was that HBK was conflicted because obviously Triple H is his friend, and yet at the same time, Undertaker is the legend, 19-0. And I thought they did a good job at him, especially with Shawn Michaels as the referee, making it look like a couple points where he was actually going to ring the bell and end the match because Triple H was basically telling him that, I can't pin him. He won't be pinned. So I'm just going to have to beat the hell out of him. And then you're going to have to make the call. You're going to have to stop this match and say it's over. And then they did the storyline also. And they did a really good job, I thought, with the mic being in the ring where you could hear the guys talking because they were telling the story not only with the actions in the ring, but they also were telling the story with the dialogue where Undertaker kept saying, "Don't end this match on, don't end the match on." And he was getting, Undertaker was getting the hell beat out of him. I said, he had the sledgehammer, the chair shots. Obviously, this was a match you expected to have the near falls, the pedigree. There was one spot where Shawn Michaels super kicked Undertaker, followed by a pedigree, and then the Undertaker kicked out. So you knew there was going to be the high spots where there was going to be the choke slam, there was going to be the tombstone, Triple H would kick out, and in the end, they gave him 30 minutes. It was a hell of a Hell in the Cell match, and I think for sure this was definitely the match of the night.
Oh yeah, I have to agree. It was definitely the match of the night. The number one thing, well, first off, I shouldn't say not the number one thing, but first off, I thought it was very appropriate that Jim Ross came out to do the announcing for this match. And you really didn't hear a whole lot from Michael Cole. It was just like the old days with the King and JR out there. But yeah, I thought it was a great match. I think Shawn Michaels did his part well. My only criticism for the match was I thought there were a few timing issues where, both Undertaker and Triple H were on the match and they were, they were really selling their injuries and that kind of thing. And I thought some of it just went on a little long. There were a couple times where Shawn Michaels was going to ring the bell and it looked like it came across very effective. And then there were a few other times when, it kind of just seemed like, what's going on here? Just like pauses in the match. I don't understand why, and this isn't a criticism against the match, it's just the criticism against WWE in general, but I don't understand the point of having this be a Hell in a Cell match. I realize that they used the cell early on, but other than that, it really didn't come into play. If it was a way to justify the use of the steel chair and the sledgehammer and all that kind of stuff, I don't understand why a street fight or something else wouldn't have done. But, overall, this was definitely a good match. It was the match of the night. I personally don't think that it was better than the first Triple H Undertaker match from last year. I personally enjoyed that match more. But it was definitely a great match. Shawn Michaels did his part great. It was bittersweet. And I think Jim Ross said that as well, that this might be the last time that we'll see all three men, at the same place at the same time in this type of setting and this big match feel, because, I don't understand the point of The Undertaker going 21-0, 22-0, 23-0, wherever he stops, it doesn't have the ring to it that 20-0 does. I think that it's in all likelihood that he probably is done. I think Triple H more than likely will, take a step back and continue evolving, if you will, when it comes to the business sense of WWE. And Shawn Michaels is probably going to go back to Texas and enjoy retirement. So for three guys that have meant so much to the company, and Shawn and Undertaker particularly, you know, they were guys that had been with the company through thick and thin, the really lean years. I know that Hunter came along then too with the Hunter Hearst Helmsley gimmick, but he wasn't as important to the company as Shawn or The Undertaker were. You know, if you think back, you remember back to 95, 96, at different point in times, you know, Raw was coming from buildings that held maybe 3,000 people. You know, the WWE was just hurting. It was after the steroid scandal, all that kind of stuff. And Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, both, they hung around and stuck with the company, and they saw it through thick and thin. So for this to be basically an exit for, you know, and we saw Shawn retire when The Undertaker defeated him, what, 2 years ago now, I guess. You know, but this was, I truly believe, more than likely the end of The Undertaker, the end of The Undertaker gimmick. I think that he'll probably still make appearances. We'll still hear from him. But, you know, it was the end. It was the end of a generation of guys who came up, you know, the old-fashioned way. It's not done that way anymore, and it's a bittersweet thing. I think it was nice that they got their moment. I think it was nice in the end when the three of them walked out together. I think it was fitting. And, you know, I really don't have a whole lot of complaints. The false finishes in the match, as I told you offline before we started, this was the night of false finishes. And I think it got a bit out of control. But, you know, they were, of course, expected in this match. I think there might have been a few too many. But overall, good match. Thumbs up. Match of the night for sure, and I'm sad to see these guys go. I'm very happy with what they gave us and what they've given us over the years, and I look forward to see what to seeing what Triple H can do in a you know, the business side of things and the creative side of things, and I'm happy for these guys, and I think it's time that The Undertaker got some rest, and I'm happy that Shawn Michaels gets to be with his family, but at the same time, it is bittersweet. It's sad. I hate to see him go.
Yeah, it really did feel like an end of an era, the way they played this match up. Obviously, no matter who would win, something would come to an end, and obviously it did seem like with Triple H losing, that was going to be it for him. We've already seen the end of HBK's in-ring career. He's been true to stay out of the ring, except, you know, he got into this match to be the special guest referee. Should note a couple of things here. As you were saying, Jim Ross had come out and did the announcing. And you're right, they let Michael Cole say the very minimum in this match, which was very good. Let Jim Ross really call the action old school. There was an acknowledgement when HBK came out and he pointed to Jim Ross. Felt like, you know, he gave him his proper respect. They also did announce before the match that the official attendance was 78,363. Of course, you know, obviously it's probably a gimmick number. They usually add, you know, 5-10% to that final number when it's all said and done. I was getting reports from the building. It was probably 98-99% full. It was not a complete sellout. There were still tickets available. When you entered the building, people, you know, they were still selling the tickets. So it wasn't a complete sellout. They obviously did a very good job getting very close to being a full capacity show. But in the end, it was still a little bit short. I don't think they actually acknowledged it was a sellout. I think they kept saying it was 78,363, which was the record for that particular stadium. But then to end our thoughts on Triple H and Undertaker, after the match, Undertaker was helped up by Shawn Michaels, and then the three of them got out of the ring. Actually, it was Undertaker helped Hunter up, and then the three of them were outside. They were leaving together. They were an arm in arm in arm, and there was a spot where they just basically hugged at the end. And I think that was that to me is going to be a WrestleMania moment that you'll remember. I think it's going to be up there with the time Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit embraced after what was WrestleMania 20, when they finally got, you know, their day, when they both got the championship belts. I thought that was a very touching moment. Didn't make a lot of sense from the storyline perspective of, you know, one guy trying to kill each other with a sledgehammer and a chair. But at the end of the day, these were the three of the biggest stars we've seen in professional wrestling. And It definitely did seem like end of an era. I don't know if we're going to see Triple H wrestle again. I don't know if we're going to see Undertaker wrestle again. I don't get the impression Undertaker wants to retire, but again, obviously at his age, it all depends on what his body tells him. I do think we'll probably see Triple H at some point again in some capacity. Because I think if this was going to be it for Triple H, it would have been the retirement match, streak versus retirement match. But they didn't go that direction. So I think you'll see Triple H at some point again. But this was, like you said, you know, this was a hell of a match. I tend to agree with you also in that I thought last year's match was slightly better. And as you were saying, the Hell in a Cell kind of lost its meaning about the halfway point when it was mostly chair shots, sledgehammers, and they went, you know, that direction versus, you know, constantly using the Hell in the Cell. But, again, this was definitely the match of the night. And then I guess you kind of put this in the middle of the show because, you know, no matter what follows it, it's going to be, you know, good luck to that because the fans were really into this match. And then what came up next, they went with Team Johnny versus Team Teddy. A match I don't think nobody really particularly cared about. I think there was a lot of people in this match that people probably shaking their head like, who is this guy? They had the Bella Twins both introduced, one half of each of the teams, which I didn't quite understand. Maybe I missed something with SmackDown like Adam did there. I don't know what that was all about. But, you know, they did this spot with Eve early in the show where she was a heel in the Divas match. And yet they had her portrayed as a baby face along with Zack Ryder. I thought when Eve turned on Zack Ryder, it made Zack Ryder look like a total boob.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with just about everything you said. I don't think people really cared too much about this match. I like John Laurinaitis. I like him in the authority role. And I think that's okay for him to be featured on both shows. I don't know where this leaves Teddy Long. I've heard people talk about him coming back as a manager. I think maybe Teddy Long's time in front of the camera with WWE might be coming to an end here shortly. I'm not totally sure, but the Bella Twins, I think I remember seeing something on Raw about they liked somebody from each team or something. I don't know. I mean, you know, are the Bella Twins really thing other than, you know, something nice to look at? And I'm sure that they're really smart, too. But, you know, this match, the Eve situation, I mean, I don't know. I think Zack Ryder's looked kind of like a doofus since he came back. And Eve said, you know, she was sorry or whatever, however it played out. I don't remember exact words, but... you know, I'm kind of just sick of this storyline, and I think that it's a shame because I think Zack Ryder was really over. I'm not so sure that he is now. He didn't get much of a reaction on from the WrestleMania crowd, and you got to figure, I mean, you know, you have a guy that's so over with the crowd, and then you have someone destroy him over and over and over and over again, and then he just kind of comes back, first of all, from a broken neck. He's supposed to have a broken neck, and he's in a wheelchair and all this stuff. And then he comes back a month later, and he's you know, wrestling again. I don't know. Dolph Ziggler and The Miz were definitely the highlights of this match. I've always been a big Santino Marella fan. I think that the guy's got a lot of talent when it comes to being able to be genuinely funny. You know, in wrestling, they've always tried to, you know, get laughs and elicit laughs, and it's always come across as kind of silly or cheesy. And I think Santino Marella is genuinely funny. I think he's an entertaining guy. But I think the standouts in this match were The Miz and Dolph Ziggler. I like both guys. I like Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger together. I don't see why The Miz couldn't be thrown in with that group. And, you know, maybe have some kind of loose affiliation with John Laurinaitis and Vicky Guerrero and go forward from that. Otherwise, a forgetful match, not a lot of interest in it to begin with. I think it was just a way to get, you know, the mid-card, the rest of the mid-card. You got R-Truth, Kofi Kingston, Santino Marella, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, Mark Henry. I mean, it was an opportunity to get the mid-card, your core mid-card guys on the show. So I think that's what it was, and it was what it was.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was a match where they just kind of put people in this match. Remember, this was probably originally going to be the Money in the Bank match. Ended up deciding to go with Money in the Bank on a pay-per-view, which I don't quite understand. I think there's more importance of the Money in the Bank if it's on at WrestleMania, where there's one briefcase rather than, you know, a Raw briefcase or a SmackDown briefcase. Especially with what they've done with the brands. I just think there's don't really need two championships. You don't really need two Money in the Bank matches. But, you know, that's another argument for another day. But this match came off and the way, Zack Ryder looked like a total goof. And then the other guys from the SmackDown side, you know, they just kind of stood around there like, you know, what just happened? I thought they kind of looked like a bunch of boobs as well, where, you know, they're representing, you know, Teddy Long. And now this is all over for Teddy. As you said, maybe they'll make him a manager. Who knows what they'll do with him? But I don't know. This is like a nothing match. And obviously, after you follow that up with Undertaker Triple H, it was going to be a pretty much, no matter what followed that match, was going to be a nothing match. And this was certainly a nothing match, nothing to write home. In fact, I bet in a couple of weeks you probably remember who was even involved in this match. But we should also note, prior to this match, they did the Hall of Fame ceremony, or I should say they came out and introduced the class of 2012. That was very touching, when they introduced Edge. Edge did everything he could do to fight back the tears. Obviously very emotional for him, certainly out of wrestling before. He was probably ready to be out of wrestling. They announced that they're going to give away 100 trips to WrestleMania 29. They played that up a couple of times. And they also did this spot where Florida, I guess one of the rap stars, was backstage and he was getting kind of harassed by Heath Slater. Heath Slater wanted to be a part of his act. And for some reason, Adam, I don't know why, but Heath Slater met the wall. And I don't know what that was all about, but I guess it's just a point to get Heath Slater on the show.
Well, Flo Rida or Florida or whatever you want to call him works stiff. Heath Slater took a shot from Flo Rida. But, I want to touch on the Hall of Fame thing. I thought it was kind of awkward. I've yet to see footage of the Hall of Fame ceremony. I imagine it's probably wrapping up right now on USA as we're taping this. I'm interested to see how the whole Ric Flair portrayal plays out. They didn't really focus on him much at all during the WrestleMania broadcast. And I think it's also interesting to note, I guess we'll see in the Hall of Fame ceremony, but as we saw posted earlier today, the stipulations per Ric Flair's appearance were they wanted TNA to be mentioned by name on air, and then also to possibly have the use of a contracted WWE superstar for a DVD production in the future from TNA Wrestling. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he is portrayed in the during the Hall of Fame ceremony itself. But definitely an emotional thing to see Edge, and yeah, you could definitely tell that he was teared up quite a bit. And I have to say, I got to give Edge credit and I got to give him props because he got probably one of the loudest pops of the night. And when they cut off that traditional elevator music that they play during the announcement of the Hall of Fame inductees, and you heard that all too familiar line from Edge, and the crowd erupted, and you could see the tears in his eyes. And it truly was, for me, that was an emotional moment. You know, I can remember Edge as Sexton Hardcastle from the independent scene, and the guy was truly a phenomenal talent, and I think that it's a shame that his career was taken so early. I'm glad that he can live the rest of his life, in decent health. I don't want to see the guy, jeopardize his health in the long term, but definitely an emotional moment, and my heart goes out to the guy. You could tell that, it was rough for him, but definitely deserving moment and a deserving pop. As I said, it was one of the loudest of the night, in my opinion. Definitely a good segment with the Hall of Fame thing there, the Flo Rida thing. I'm not much for hip-hop music to begin with, but to me, just another senseless skit. I think that was the Dude Busters, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not even sure. I get so many of these guys confused that are on the undercard for SmackDown, or I should just say on Next or superstars. I wasn't really familiar. I think it was Tyler Rex and somebody else who came over to let Heath Slater know that he just got owned by Flo Rida. But basically a big waste of time.
Yeah, I think it might have been Tyler Reeks and Curt Hawkins, if I remember right.
There we go.
And I think Hawkins has been the one that's been helping Rock train for his match with John Cena, so they wanted to give him a little bit of a look-see, I guess, at WrestleMania. We saw a promo for Extreme Rules, which is the next pay-per-view on April 29th. At ringside, we saw A-Rod with Torrey Wilson, so they wanted to mention a couple of celebrities that were there. Andy Garcia was there. They mentioned him. Then we had a backstage angle where CM Punk is warming up for his match with Chris Jericho. John Laurinaitis comes in with his team. You know, they're celebrating. They just won their match. John Laurinaitis tells Punk that he wants a wrestling match tonight. He doesn't want a brawl. He says if Punk loses his temper and he gets disqualified, then he drops the title to Jericho. You know, I really hate these late-minute stipulations. You know, if this was a stipulation they wanted to do, do this on television. Don't do this 15 minutes before their match. They throw an extra stipulation in this match. So they change a stipulation, or Justin Roberts acknowledges that the new stipulation now is if CM Punk is disqualified or counted out, he will lose the WWE Championship, which obviously they're not going to do that. You know, they're not going to, at WrestleMania, not going to change a title that way. But then again, I don't know. They had the world championship title change in 18 seconds. But next up was CM Punk defending against Chris Jericho. I thought this was a pretty good match overall. I thought the two worked well together. The problem, I thought, Adam, in watching this match was the first, 10, 15 minutes. To me, it didn't sound like the fans were into this match at all. They did a lot of mat wrestling here. He had the walls of Jericho. They had a couple near falls with the GTS. Again, as you were saying before, this is the night of kickouts. They had all their patented spots, the code breaker, the walls of Jericho. Again, they kept kicking out of their moves. My only real criticism of this match in watching it was just the fans were not into it. And it seems like the first 10, 15 minutes, it was kind of a dull pace match.
Yeah, there were definitely times throughout the night that the crowd just wasn't into it. You know, the funny thing is the thing that stuck out to me most about, the build-up for this match, because, the funny thing about WrestleMania is that it started out as, of course, it was the three-hour spectacular, whatever, and now it's become four, and we get these big build-ups for these matches, and I was starting to combine the word matches with entrances, which was my next thought, come out with mattresses somehow, but entrances is what my point was going to be. If you go back to the early WrestleManias and WrestleMania 3, which is supposed to be the largest crowd ever, the entrances have become so elaborate. I don't think CM Punk needed to have the fireworks spectacular that he did. It just doesn't jive with his character for me. I don't know. I mean, I just thought how crazy and insane and big things have gotten. But, the match, to me, I thought it was good. It did seem like something just wasn't quite right. I think it was the crowd. The crowd did seem like they weren't into it that much. The crowd was there for The Rock and John Cena and Triple H and The Undertaker. And not that this wasn't a good match. I think it was a good match. I think this could have been a great program. I'm disappointed with the finish. Where do you go from here? Rumor has it that Chris Jericho would be sticking around through the summer, possibly with a rematch at SummerSlam between CM Punk and Jericho. In my opinion, where do you go? What's the selling point for a match between them at SummerSlam if it does happen? I wouldn't have had Chris Jericho win clean. I would have had him cheat. I would have had him, pull out all the stops to somehow take the title, somehow become the new WWE champion, but then still obnoxiously as possible tout that he is the best in the world at what he does, even though he needed to cheat to win. And then you, of course, have the classic build between heel and face. That leads up to SummerSlam, and if Chris Jericho is going to leave after that, then that's fine. He drops the title back to CM Punk. CM Punk gets his moment, you know, in the sun at SummerSlam, and everything works out, and it's Wrestling 101, and we all go home happy. That didn't happen. At this point in time, I was starting to think very strongly that The Rock might go over in the main event because, you know, we had seen a face win the World Heavyweight title and that Match of the Year candidate in the opening World Heavyweight Championship contest. And then we saw CM Punk retain against Chris Jericho, which, you know, if you think about it, Chris Jericho hasn't really worked a lot since he's returned. He came back January 2nd. He didn't have a match until the Royal Rumble, which he lost. He worked at the Raw where he didn't get tagged in at all when he, you know, completed his heel turn or whatever. At the Elimination Chamber match, he lost. We've just seen Chris Jericho lose when it's been big-time matches, important matches he's lost. So, to me, that kind of killed his return a little bit, the credibility of it, the importance of this match. And I don't know. I just thought the finish is not the way I would have gone. I'm a fan of CM Punk. I think he's a great wrestler. I think he, more than anybody, is the future of this company. I think that he is a throwback to what wrestling used to be. I think CM Punk would be over in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. He's a great, great, great wrestler. But I just didn't see him winning last night, unless this feud is done now. But if it is done, then I really got to say, this was not as important as it could have been.
You know, one thing to think of, the next pay-per-view they already mentioned was Extreme Rules on April the 29th. Do you know where Extreme Rules is going to be held?
I don't.
Chicago, Illinois.
Well, the WWE does like to screw people, if you will, fan favorites
right,
especially, in their hometown.
Yep.
So I guess we might see the Great Khali as the new WWE heavyweight champion as he beats CM Punk in 23 seconds. They were going for the record, but, you know.
I don't know if I'd reach quite that far, but I could definitely see if they're going to continue this program, I could see Jericho, you know, taking the championship from CM Punk in his hometown of Chicago. That's just something to think about.
Yeah,
and
definitely a possibility.
You know, we're taping the show before Raw airs. That seems like that would probably be a direction they would go if they want to continue this program, that have, you know, have Jericho go over at the next pay-per-view. And then obviously have another, you know, rubber match somewhere down the line, possibly even SummerSlam, as you were saying. But we'll see which direction they go. And then, I tell you, Adam, after the championship match there, it seemed like they had about 20, 25 minutes of just filler, let's just waste time. They did a spot where they acknowledged the pilots from the F-15 that flew over earlier. We saw a promo for WrestleMania 29, of course, is April the 7th, 2013. So already, Adam, we're on the road to WrestleMania 29, even that it's a little over a year from now. And then we had the spot where Brodus Clay, out of nowhere, Funkasaurus, comes out, and he takes out his cell phone and he encourages everybody to pick up the phone and call their mamas. So he calls his mama, and Mama Funk says that she's in the building and that she's there with her bridge club. So it was his job then to find
it's
his mama.
It's hard to take you serious saying this right now. And I realize that you're just saying what happened, but thinking about it and hearing you say it, it's hard to take it seriously. I want to say in my best Vince McMahon voice, the spectacle of WrestleMania. Do you know what I mean? As we see this clip, but go ahead, continue.
It's hard to describe because I'm looking at my notes because I wouldn't remember this verbatim how it happened because this is not a moment I'm going to remember WrestleMania. But Mama Clay comes out and she's dancing. She's just, you know, obviously some dancer they found to portray Mama Clay, and she's out there dancing. And then before you know it, the Bridge Club shows up, and there's probably, 15, 20 women out there also dancing. And, yeah, as Adam was alluding to there, it's hard to take this seriously. It was just, to me, again, Adam, they put this on. This got more time than Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. You know, this probably went on, I don't know, I didn't time it, but I don't know. What do you think of 7, 8, 9 minutes they had these people out there with this spot? They're out there dancing and just dancing, and I'm just thinking, you know, we lost our championship match for this spot on the night.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what can be said about it? I thought there was a post on the WrestleMania results page at Gerwig.net that someone said, and I can't remember who it was. I'm sorry. I would love to give you credit for it, but I read it late last night, early this morning, and they said something about the show needing a big surprise. Not even necessarily a big surprise, but a surprise. It needed something that we didn't think was going to happen or we couldn't predict. This wasn't the surprise I think they were talking about, but since you went ahead and did this, why not have Lord Tensai or Matt Bloom or Albert or Giant Bernard, who is returning, as we all know, which could be possibly tonight, the WrestleMania or the Raw after WrestleMania is always the time where we usually get a debut, or, you know, the weeks after. Why not have had him make his debut at WrestleMania during this? And I'm not saying build toward a Brodus Clay Lord Tensai feud, but Brodus Clay has been pushed so dominantly once the match gets serious. Why not have Lord Tensai make his debut during this segment and come out of nowhere, blindside Brodus Clay, and take him out? Not to a point where it's, oh my gosh, you know, Brodus Clay is being carried out on a stretcher, but just to really get over the debut of Matt Bloom as the Lord Tensai character and to be someone that, you know, we should take seriously and is going to be deserving of this main event push that he's rumored to get, you know, I think that would have been the perfect opportunity for him to come out and just destroy Brodus Clay, and it really doesn't hurt with the Brodus Clay character. They don't even really need to have a match, you know, to blow the angle off. It could have just been, you know, a spur of the moment kind of thing where, you know, he comes out and takes him out and ends the segment, interrupts this WrestleMania moment that we've got with Mama Clay and her bridge club. But it didn't happen, and you know, we got the start to the build-up for, you know, of course, the reason why we were all there, why we all watched. And, you know, again, we got to see Flo Rida, this time sans shirt, and the MGK, they called him, the skinny white guy who rapped before. Just more filler in a show that had commercials for Kmart and had, you know, I mean, just the silliest things, more filler. And by the way, speaking of all the commercials and fillers and ads and things that they had, I was really surprised. This was supposed to be the launch date for the WWE Network. Now, I realize they pushed that back until the fall, but I'm surprised. I don't recall or remember seeing a commercial for that same preview that we've seen 100 times over. I thought maybe they would debut a new one, maybe with more clips from the Legend House that they're recording now. But, yeah, just more filler and more waste of time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point with the WWE Network. You know, we did see the promos on Raw that was kind of building up the network. And, of course, we know that the WWE Network is still looking for the proper cable and satellite clearances to get that one launched. Last I hear, they still got a lot of positions to fill as well. But you're right, there was no mention of the network at all, nothing with the Legends House. And now I'm actually hearing the Legends House possibly could even be on Sci-Fi. I guess they haven't decided yet, but maybe put the Legends House on Sci-Fi and then maybe do the second season of the Legends show on WWE Network whenever that launches, which now we're hearing maybe November, maybe December, who knows, at this juncture. But you're right, April the 1st was the original air date or launch date for the WWE Network, and there really was no mention of it at all. And I agree with Adam here. Boy, the Flo Rida and the MGK, if that's what his name was, I don't even know. And if I mess up his name, it's just, you know, I'm watching this, and I really couldn't take it. It just seemed like it was going on forever. I didn't think the music was very good, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a big hip hop fan, but there's certainly some hip hop stuff I can tolerate that I think is okay. This stuff just was just made my ears numb. I just couldn't take it anymore. I went on Twitter, made a couple of snide remarks, how what a waste of time this is, and somebody said to me on Twitter that you know, this is entertainment mania. Now this is not WrestleMania anymore. And, you know, somebody said that they're not opposed to music, but just bad music. And I just thought, boy, I just heard about 15, 20 minutes of bad music here after that Brodus Clay segment. So we finally got the elaborate introductions. We saw John Cena. It looked like John Cena came out in a Boston Celtic-like new look tonight or last night. And then, of course, we got the big entrance by The Rock. The Rock came out with Flo Rida still out there. And again, Adam, this was one of those matches, once again, where there was going to be a lot of high spots where, you know, there was the Rock bottom and John Cena was able to kick out. And then there was the STF that Cena applied to the Rock, and the Rock was able to get out. A couple attitude adjustments, again, by John Cena, and the Rock was able to get out of those again. And to me, I don't know if you saw this, Adam, but when I was watching this match, and it was going on about 20 minutes, to me, it looked like The Rock was getting a little winded, like he was getting a little tired. I thought Cena still looked like he had his cardio pretty much in shape and he was still ready to go. But I thought, you know, figuring that this was The Rock's first match, I mean, first singles match of this magnitude in a long time, to me, it seemed like he was getting a little bit winded towards the end there. But was able to keep it going. And then obviously the spot at the end was, it looked like John Cena was going to do the people's elbow, and of course, you know, Rock wasn't going to sell that. And then finally, you know, we got the spot we were looking for with the eyebrow, the elbow, and the Rock went over. This again, when they gave this match 30 minutes and 32 seconds, it was about as long as the Undertaker Triple H match. And in the end, you know, some people were surprised they went with the Rock to win. I thought maybe one of the bigger surprises of the night was that we didn't see Brock Lesnar at all. I thought maybe him coming out and interfering could possibly explain why The Rock would not win in his hometown of Miami, you know, his first real singles match back. But in the end, you know, the match, you know, The Rock won the match. This is what the fans wanted, definitely what the Miami fans wanted. In the end, they got what they wanted, and The Rock won the main event at WrestleMania.
Well, you know, it's no secret that Vince McMahon likes to end the big show with the face going over and celebrating with the crowd and the crowd being sent home happy. That's not to say that John Cena was the heel in this match, because basically you had face versus face. And I think it's funny that it marked the 10-year anniversary of The Rock versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan from WrestleMania 18 this year. And now we saw The Rock and John Cena, of course. First things first, I have to say that I have heavily criticized John Cena in the past on this, on these podcasts and in the written word and, you know, any opportunity I got to. But the program with Kane and some of the promos and the way that they're positioning John Cena and have positioned him over the last few months, I really have to say that, you know, during the program with Kane, I thought they were sort of heel, and I got excited for that because I really honestly think, especially at that time, I don't know how it'll play off now, but I think at that time a heel turn would have really been a good thing for John Cena. It would have been surprising. It could have been great, you know, for John Cena to finally be able to come out and say, you know, for everyone that's saying Cena sucks, screw you. But then with this whole build up with The Rock, they've kind of really gotten away from the white rapper kind of gangster type gimmick that John Cena's had, and he's really almost become that Boston underdog, which it's like you said, he came out with a jersey that kind of looked like a Boston Celtics jersey. Become that Boston underdog type character from the movies like The Town you know, The Fighter and things like that. He kind of portrays that character, and while, you know, that's not necessarily a gimmick that I like, I mean, I don't necessarily care for it. I like it better than the white rapper, the gangster type of image that they'd always tried to push him off as. I think that, you know, ideally, if I could have booked this match, and I told the people that I was watching WrestleMania with, I said, if I could have booked this match, they said, you know, that's not going to happen, that's not going to happen. I said, I know it's not going to happen, but if I could have booked this match, I would have had John Cena win clean. The Rock does not lose anything. He does not lose any stature. He does not lose any face by losing clean to John Cena. I would have had him 100% in the middle of the ring, go down to the attitude adjustment, the five knuckle shuffle, whatever you want it to be. But I would have had even the Rock Bottom, have John Cena beat the Rock with his own move. But I would have had John Cena pin the Rock cleanly in the middle of the ring, and the Rock basically roll out of the ring. You didn't even notice that he's gone. John Cena celebrating, and then immediately, like you say, have Brock Lesnar come out and dump, you know, John Cena on his head and have the show go off the air like that. It would do twofold. It would get John Cena over in the fact that he just beat arguably one of the greatest superstars of all time in The Rock. He beat him cleanly. But then we'd also forget about that loss for The Rock, because immediately we would look at this program between John Cena and Brock Lesnar. He would immediately shift focus away from The Rock losing. So then when The Rock came back, it wouldn't be a big deal that he lost with John Cena. Where else can this feud go? I don't care to see them have another match. I think it was good for what it was, but I just was disappointed with the ending. You know, a lot of people online are saying, oh, you guys are all Cena haters, and now all of a sudden you're saying, you know, why didn't he go over? He should have gone over. But I really honestly think he should have. I think that one of the things about Cena that kind of changed my mind about him were the promos about how The Rock was going to leave after WrestleMania. He was going back to Hollywood, and that John Cena would still be here tomorrow. How did he explain this loss without any real clear direction tonight on Raw? I don't know how it's going to go down. I don't know how it's going to happen, but the match was nothing special in particular. The Rock did look a little blown up there. You know, The Rock's in phenomenal shape, but it's all about conditioning when it comes to professional wrestling. So I can't really blame the guy. I think he did the best of his ability, the best that he could. 8 years is a long time to be away, but for the match being what it was, it was good. The match itself was good. I don't expect or couldn't expect anything better from the two of these guys. I just I can't support the finish. I can't support the outcome. I think John Cena needed to go over here, and he didn't.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where they just figure, you know, both are megastars, that it doesn't really matter who wins this match. As you were saying, you know, Vince wants to send the people home happy, and then obviously the people that were paying, well, I guess it was $54.95 if you were ordered on standard definition, or if you ordered on high definition, it was $65 for the show. So I guess when the show ends, you want people to be happy. And at the end of the night, when it was all said and done, the pay-per-view was over. I was happy overall, as you were alluding to earlier in the show, that the first half of the pay-per-view, I should say the first four matches, were not anything to write home about, and then the four matches after, well, I guess really the three matches, because obviously you could really throw Team Johnny and Team Teddy out of the mix, but then you got the Undertaker match, and then you have the Rock Cena match, plus the championship match with Punk and Jericho. And then at the end of the night, I guess overall, I'm agreeing with what Adam said earlier in the podcast, where he gave the show, you know, slightly a thumbs up, maybe in the middle of the slightly thumbs up. That's kind of the way I ended my final thoughts on WrestleMania. And again, that was WrestleMania 28. I want to thank Adam for, coming on tonight and giving his thoughts on the pay-per-view. A couple of quick notes here. Obviously, with us ending our thoughts on WrestleMania, we're going to see what direction they're going to go with The Rock, which direction they're going to go with John Cena. There is rumblings that The Rock will be back for SummerSlam. Of course, Adam was talking about, he's got a very busy entertainment schedule coming up with all the movies. So we'll see what direction we're going to go with The Rock. Obviously, he's already committed for WrestleMania 29, which is why we were alluding to maybe they could have brought Brock Lesnar out, last night to kind of set the tone for what direction they're going to go here in 2012, 2013. But if you enjoyed this podcast, you can definitely check out our audio section at Gerwick.net. All our previous podcasts we did with Adams up there. Some recent ones that to note, we just did an interview with Jennifer Blake. Malia Hosaka was talking about her retirement. We had Disco Inferno, The Godfather, Grandmaster Sexay, Al Snow plug in his upcoming movie, or actually the movie is out now. So if you want to get a chance to check out those audios, you can also subscribe to our iTunes page as well, and they'll be sent to you. You can definitely never miss a podcast or an interview that we have. Definitely, if you get a chance to check out the Stan Hansen interview. Stan Hansen, the legendary Stan Hansen, doesn't do many interviews, so it was a great honor and a pleasure to talk to Stan Hansen. So again, that's in the audio section up at Gerwick.net. And Adam, as we end this podcast, maybe final thoughts as we reflect on WrestleMania 28.
WrestleMania 28 for me was a throwback in a lot of ways to the WrestleManias in professional wrestling from my childhood. And, I mean, let's face it, those adult fans listening right now, the ones that go and check out the Gerwick.net and our fans that follow the sport, you know, to me, professional wrestling is a sport. People argue, and I argue with people on a daily basis, that the greatest athletes in the world are professional wrestlers. There is no off season. These guys go out there and they do what they do, and they do it with, you know, 90% of the time not getting hurt or not hurting someone to the point where they can't work tomorrow. These guys are the greatest athletes, and it's been proven that professional football players, basketball players, baseball players, I don't care what you are, you can't do what these guys do. I give them the utmost respect, and I say that it was a throwback in a sense that they booked the main event for this match a year out. And then they worked backwards. There were some ups and downs, and there were some points in time where, you know, we didn't know where it was going to go or which direction it was headed in. But ultimately, I have to say that it paid off in the end. Overall, I was entertained by the show. I give it a slightly thumbs towards the middle, leaning towards up, only because there were a few things that I didn't like about the show. But overall, I have to say I was impressed with WrestleMania. I look forward to seeing where it's going in the future. I think WWE, you just have to sit back and enjoy it. It's far too easy to criticize things, and it's far too easy to remember how things used to be. And, you know, I think you just have to sit back and enjoy it. I was talking with a good friend of mine the other day, the great and fantastic Wild Bull Miller. Bull Miller has been a promoter slash wrestler in the Central Ohio area for the last 35 odd years. And, you know, we were both talking, and I think that professional wrestling is, people have always said it's a cycle and the wrestling business goes up and it goes down. But I think that we're right on the cusp of something big. I think that it's about to go back up. I think we're about to have another boom period. You know, we've seen the ascension of guys like CM Punk and, you know, Daniel Bryan and guys that you never thought you'd see wearing the gold. It was one thing to have Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit as your world champion and WWE champion because they were smaller in stature and they were guys that, you know, you didn't really see in that main event spot only because it had been filled by your Kevin Nashes and your Hulk Hogans. But now we've seen the sport evolve even more to the point where we have guys who are most well known outside of their WWE tenures from Ring of Honor. You've got Ring of Honor on Sinclair stations, and I know that they don't have coverage everywhere, but in my area, you have Ring of Honor available. You have Pro Wrestling Ohio available on SportsTime Ohio. You've got Raw, SmackDown, TNA. Never it hasn't been this way since you caught USWA or Global Wrestling on ESPN, but never has there been so much wrestling on and available. There are local stations across the country that are willing to take a risk on indie wrestling. You've got NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. SportsTime Ohio has Pro Wrestling Ohio, as I said. You know, and my God, WrestleMania week alone, the city of Miami was bursting with wrestling activity. You had Dragon Gate USA down there. You had My close personal friend, Howard Brody's NWA Ring Warriors drew, 500 people. They had a great show, a great card. You had Ring of Honor down there for two internet pay-per-views. Wrestle Reunion had things going on. The wrestling business is looking up. It's going, in that upward trend, and big things are on the horizon. I think Brock Lesnar will grace the WWE in 2012. It's going to be a big, huge story when he comes back, and not just in the wrestling world, but in the mainstream media. Wrestling is on the rise, and I think that it's a great thing. It's awesome as a fan, and like I said, it's so easy to criticize WWE because we look back to the Attitude Era, or we look back to the 80s, and we look back to the NWA of the 70s and 80s, and we think about how things have always been done. But if you just sit back and enjoy wrestling and you forget about the fact that they don't always say wrestling, since World Wrestling Entertainment became WWE, there's actually been more references to old school wrestling than there were before the change. You've got guys like Dolph Ziggler who are breaking out and becoming just, a star of tomorrow, a star of the future, a guy who's going to be over. There's never been so many mid-card guys over in the last 10 years, so... All in all, I have to say that WrestleMania was a success, and I'm just very optimistic and very much look forward to see where not only the WWE goes, but professional wrestling as a whole goes within the next, 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, because I think things are on their way up for sure.
Yeah, we'll see if WrestleMania, they can keep the momentum of WrestleMania going into obviously, further along in 2012, leading up to SummerSlam in the summer. I want to again thank Adam for coming on tonight and giving his thoughts and opinions of WrestleMania 28, as we did last year with WrestleMania 27. If you want to go back and listen to that podcast again, another cheap plug to go back to our archives and definitely check that out, or just go to the pay-per-view results page and look for WrestleMania 27. The podcast from last year is up there as well. And as always, we want to know what you think. Obviously, the comments are left by the readers. We always enjoy reading those. You can go back to the individual match results, the live coverage we did, which has a lot of comments that were coming in as the matches were taking place. And you can also go to the recap of WrestleMania 28 and leave your comments on the show. And, of course, you can obviously give us your thoughts and opinions about this podcast. Do you agree with what we're saying? Did you like the show more than us? Did you like the show less than us? I think there were certainly those that thought this was one of the best entertainment, or I should say WrestleManias of all time, and there was those that thought it was one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. So again, the opinions were diverse out there. You can obviously vote on our polls. You can leave us comments. And as always, we do appreciate your support here at Gerwick.net. Again, thank you, Adam, and we'll talk to you real soon. Definitely check out Gerwick.net for all your wrestling news and check out the audio archives for previous interviews and our podcast here at Gerwick.net.